you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hi, my name is Danny Roth, and this is Everyday Horror. It's a podcast where we watch at least one horror movie for every day in the month of October, and then we talk about it. So scary. Today, I am joined by the co-host of the Wynonna Earp podcast, the official one at Sci-Fi Wire, Max Tadaldi. Hi, Max.
Hey, Danny. How's it going?
I'm doing good. How's Wynonna Earp? How's that going?
You know, Wynonna Earp is, that's my lifeblood. I live and breathe that. We're out of episodes. So I think that, I'm hurting a little bit. I'm jonesing a little bit for some more Wynonna, but it's coming back next year. So we got that to look forward to.
The good news is that, if you were jonesing for more podcast, you come to the right place. This is a little bit different. A little different. I don't know that. Wynonna certainly has horror elements. I don't know if I would compare Wynonna Earp the series with the movie you chose.
I don't think I would either.
And on that smooth as silk segue, what movie did you pick?
So yeah, I mean, first off, Danny, I gotta thank you so much for inviting me onto this podcast, because I think it's gonna also. Not only do we get to chat in a work setting, which is unusual for us, but I also get to showcase sort of like a weirder side of my cinematic likes and dislikes.
I guess people don't know what a weirdo you are.
Yeah, no, dude, I'm totally weird. I think while Wynonna has it's a beautiful and lovely show. There's an element of earnestness to it that I think for my personal movie taste, I tend to shy away from. That is part of the reason why, for this podcast, I chose the 1989 body horror classic Society, which was directed by Brian Yuzna, who we might know from such other sort of body horror classics as Bride of Reanimator, Beyond Reanimator, basically the Reanimator franchise. So.
Yeah, he was involved in he didn't direct the original Reanimator, but he was a big part of creating that one. And in fact, the movie, if you're I would say like a 80s or 90s kid, the movie you actually know him for is Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Which is wild. That's a little bit on the other end of the sort of cinematic spectrum.
But honestly, if you go back and rewatch that Rick Moranis children's classic, everything kind of clicks into place. All right, so Society, I mean, just to begin, you say 1989. An interesting thing about it is that it didn't actually come out in America until the 90s. And there are places that had never seen it before until it got a Blu-ray re-release through Arrow in 2015. So this is a movie that had a really long shelf life, depending on where you were. But at the very least, for most places, a couple of years. Certainly in America, it did come out until the early 90s. So
totally wild to me, because this movie looks so 1989. Like, there's no part of this movie that could be early 90s. Like, I just don't see this movie existing outside of like a 2-year period.
Well, sure. I mean, the thing about it is that it definitely has a late 80s vibe specifically. And the reason why it doesn't quite fit into the 90s is because as soon as you get into the 90s, there's people try to start getting, I don't know, some kind of CGI. Everybody wants to start sneaking that stuff. And so practical effects didn't go away overnight, but you definitely started seeing people experiment. And this is all practical all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And in a pretty grody way. So let's just, what is the pitch of this film? I feel like if you explain it, people will begin to understand why perhaps it didn't come out right away.
the plot of this movie is not necessarily what people would come to this movie for or what draws people to it. But I think that the general premise of it is that you've got this sort of this yuppie kid named Bill Whitney, who's living with his family in Beverly Hills, California. And something's not right. He's living his sort of best life. You know, he's on the basketball team. He's becomes sort of a president of the debate club, I think, in the, you know, one of the first couple scenes. So everything's working out for him. But something's not right. He doesn't fit in with his family, who is very much of the sort of upper crust of Beverly Hills society. And strange things start happening to him. He bites into an apple and sees some worms. He, you know, hooks up with a chick, and her body sort of disfigures in a creepy way. One of his friends dies, and it is all sort of at the hands of what he thinks is this upper class that includes his family. There are a lot of all these random subplots that are brought up throughout the movie that are never really resolved. I think from a narrative perspective, this movie is frankly kind of sloppy. But it all really culminates in this final scene where Bill comes back to his home, and it is sort of revealed that he is not actually the biological child of his parents. He is, in fact, adopted, and that his parents have been raising him to shunt him, which is this crazy sort of orgy of body reassembling and life force sucking that is all very, very sort of practically affected, done, and is etched into my brain, certainly. I don't know about yours. That's pretty much the plot of the movie. This is not a movie that has the intricacies of an Interstellar or, you know, something that is that you're going to really be harping on, or an Inception, perhaps. You're really not going to be focused on the plot of this movie. This is very much a crescendo that leads up to this amazing, horrific body horror scene.
We talked about The Exorcist in an earlier episode of this podcast, and I always say that you really need those first two acts of build-up to earn Act 3, which is what most people remember. In the case of Society, I'm not going to say that the first two acts are bad, but you really, I mean, if you just saw the third act of Society, you really got what you came for. You know, I mean, like, this is not complex. Really, the elevator pitch is the rich devour the poor. That's it. That's what it's about. It's you know, and interestingly, and there are a couple of layers to this that I find to be really interesting. One, Brian Yuzna had a t-shirt that said Eat the Rich, that he wore in college, and I think, I don't remember if somebody wears it in the movie or if somebody was wearing it on set or what, but you know, that's it was a good sentiment to have in the 1980s. Like, this movie is definitely, the other reason it makes sense as an 80s film is that it feels very much in direct response to the glut of 80s wealth.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
And it, you know, not to state a really obvious thing, you know.
And what I found really interesting about this movie is that, you know, it was sort of shelved until 92, but when it was finally released, it had this sort of bizarre reception where, you know, some people I think thought it was pretentious initially, but it started picking up kind of like a cult following in Europe, actually. And then by the time sort of people started finding out that Europeans were reacting positively to the movie, it started picking up a sort of critical mass of positive reviews in America as well. So it has sort of, since its initial negative reaction, gained a lot of not necessarily rave reviews from critics, but I think people realizing what this film is all about. And the final scene, it really is something special. I think, you know, I think it's easy to forget that this movie came out in an era where people weren't downloading trailers. People didn't know all of the premises of movies before they were going into it. And if you're not, if you're not clocking that final scene going into this movie, it hits you like a freight train. It is, because you don't know initially if our main character is imagining this stuff. You know, there's this amazing sub theme of paranoia where you maybe think that it's all in Billy's head. But then you very, very quickly realize that it is not. And this sort of almost alien, but like sort of human subclass is going to be joining his body and sucking him dry. And it's, the practical effects are frankly shocking.
Yeah, they're gnarly. And what's interesting, and I think the reason why the paranoia, I'm sure, ultimately is intentional. But beyond that, the big change to the script from its beginnings was that it didn't have this. This was not the ending. They were just a regular cult.
Which is so wild to me that, you know, the whole point of this movie really is that final scene. And so what did Yuzna just decide to throw it in to own it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they were going to, I mean, he had, I think, already worked with Screaming Mad George, and Screaming Mad George is this really prolific practical effects guy. And yeah, I mean, he kind of came in and looked at the script and he was like, I like it, but, you know, I want to take this thing to a really severely unnatural conclusion. And yeah, and rather it than it be, you know, some kind of like, I don't know, Illuminati situation, it is that they're, you know, actual monsters, and sort of use that in a way that is both disgusting and funny. Like, that's the other thing, is that yeah. it's so over the top that I think it's very much intended to make you laugh. So when he was making the film and when he was thinking about it, a fun fact is that Brian Yuzna was looking at the work of Salvador Dali.
Ah, that
that was,
I can see it.
and specifically, the painting that he kept looking at is called The Great Masturbator.
I'm there for that. I'm there for that. I can see that.
Yeah, if you look at it, it actually, looking at the art really gives you a glimpse of where his head was. It actually it clicks right in. But I do think it's interesting that you pointed out. So like it being successful in the UK is not surprising to me. Because the UK in general has less of a problem with seeing like man ass and such. Like, they're less puritanical than us about nudity on the whole, but specifically, like, you know, you'll see, you know, uncut men in the UK, and it's not weird. So that's like one half of it is that, and then the other half of it is that, you know, just like we had Ronald Reagan here as sort of like this thing that people were reacting to. Obviously, the UK was dealing with Margaret Thatcher, which was sort of like, you know, Reagan in a skirt, not to be, you know, like regressive about it. But, you know, she was like a woman version of Ronald Reagan.
No, I totally see that. And like, particularly the Dolly references, I think there is an element of just like trippy absurdism to this show or to this movie that is that kind of catches you off guard. And I think one of the things that I noticed in rewatching it, because I probably haven't seen this movie in frankly like 20 years, is that, you know, we've been kind of shitting on the first two acts a little bit, you know, as frankly just preamble and setup to the final scene. But there's some weirdly dark humor and moments that come. It's almost like they lucked into some really bizarre humorous elements. And, you know, frankly, so Billy's girlfriend, which changes halfway through the movie somewhat randomly, so to this woman, Clarissa, and Clarissa's mom is this strange, almost sort of like Frankenstein's monster type of character that is part of society, but she doesn't really say anything. And she kind of, you think that she is going to eat Billy throughout the movie, but is honestly just interested in kind of eating his hair. In rewatching it, I found that absolutely absurd, ridiculous, and I kind of laughed out loud.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, as we'll talk about a lot in due course. Yeah, she's like the Eric Trump, basically.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, like, there's always that weird bit of inbreeding in the upper echelons, you know, where they're trying to keep themselves pure or whatever garbage it is that super rich people think. But yeah, that sometimes, unfortunately, that'll yield something that's a little weird and not quite all there. So, yeah, there's basically, yeah, Clarissa's mother is, she definitely is, she looks a little bit almost like, yeah, it's like Bride of Frankenstein meets Divine. In a way, that's sort of the look that they give her, and yeah, it's pretty. The thing that's interesting about Clarissa, and then we'll sort of talk about the modern implications, is that that actress dated Prince.
I knew she was a Playboy model. I had no idea that she was that she got into it that deep. That's impressive. Good for her.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, she dated Prince, and Billy. The lead of the movie is like a soap opera king. He's like on every soap opera that's ever been.
I mean, with hair like that, he's got to be.
You'd
king
have to
of,
be.
King
you really have
soaps.
To be.
Yeah, it's beautiful. He gave me really, really strong Michael J. Fox vibes in this movie, and particularly with his, like, you know, he's a pseudo basketball star, but he's like 5'6", so however that works out. But it's very much the sort of Teen Wolf school of athletic prowess. That he was laying down that vibe really strong for me.
I'm 5'6". You're saying you don't think I'd be good at basketball? You don't think I got ups?
I would say that I know that you would not be good at basketball.
Wow. Cold-blooded, man. Just because I've made a career of sitting on my ass and talking.
Shots fired. Shots Whew. Fired.
Anyway, so the thing about the movie is that, yes, at the time that it was being made, it was... definitely politically relevant in 2018, once again, very relevant in a number of ways. So here's a fun fact. Do you know that the reason why Society got made is because a different movie did not get made?
What movie is that?
So he was going to make a movie with Dan O'Bannon, Brian Yuzna, okay. That is. Okay. Dan O'Bannon, who kind of has a connection to him already because Dan O'Bannon directed Return of the Living Dead. Brian Yuzna sure. directed Return of the Living Dead Part 3. But also, you know, Dan O'Bannon, known as the guy that wrote Alien. He's a pretty famous dude. He's a good writer. He's an interesting creator. They were going to do a movie together that it was either called The Man or The Men. And the plot of that movie was paranoid women discover that all men are evil aliens.
Yep, I'm there. Okay.
so kind of a bit of like a way ahead of the curve Me Too movement genre film in a way.
Sure.
Like that's sort of where that was. And then, Dan O'Bannon dropped out of that and then instead... yeah, Yuzna ended up making Society, and you know, I would say pretty relevant. Here's a thing that I feel is weirdly prophetic. There is a moment where Bill and Clarissa are kind of post coitus.
Yes, I remember it well.
And there's a line that she gives that she says to him, and she says, "How do you like your tea? Cream, sugar." Or do you want me to pee in it?
Which is perfect. It is.
Ryan Yuzna predicted the pee tape. So far ahead of the curve on this. I mean, like nearly three decades ahead, Max, on the pee tape. But yeah, I mean, like, that's a joke, but except for the part where life's a joke. But yeah, I mean, like... But this is the thing, is you watch it now and it's really hard not to find yourself thinking like, wow, this is this is a lot. I mean, like, I think a lot of people feel this way. And by the way, if you've been listening to the podcast as we've gone along day to day, you'll notice that this is not the first time that we've talked about cults. We've talked about society's ills. It tends to come up a lot in the horror movies that have been, so surprisingly, in the year of our Lord 2018, selected by people. There's not a lot of fuzzy, happy-go-lucky horror comedies or ones that are just gore and nothing else. They have a tendency to sort of have this element of society's ills or what the movie's actually about. And yeah, I mean, like, this is a movie wherein the kid is adopted and yeah, he's going to be devoured by the rich, and the rich are like really, like, it's not just that like they're monstrous, it's that the whole thing is super weird. And also, like, I think a thing that's I don't know if it's out of step or what, but like, you know, there's incest suggested in the movie.
It's not suggested. It's yeah, just yeah, straight no, it's, up it's, in it's, there. Yeah.
I mean, like, yes. I mean, literally, there's a point in which the mother, father, and sister are, like, they become, like, one entity.
That is not a metaphor. They are physically, like, one body. They are sharing this body in the worst sort of way.
Oh, yeah. And the dad's head is the butt. And he says, "You were right, Billy. I am a butthead." Maybe the best line in the whole film.
I mean, it definitely rivals the "How do you take your tea?" line. I think that line in particular, it caught me off guard because I hadn't heard the word "butthead" used in so long that I think it almost like regained its cultural strength and meaning for me. So it was like I was watching this movie. And earlier, Billy calls his dad a butthead, which is why that line, when you see Billy's father's head in an actual butt, has so much power. But he says butthead, and I had this immediate sort of shock reaction, like, oh my god, that's a pretty sweet diss. You're a butthead. It's just, it kind of like rolls off the tongue nicely.
It's a good one. Yeah, I feel like it kind of got accidentally spoiled by Mike Judge. Because now when you think of Butthead, you think of Beavis and Butthead. And
sure.
Everybody likes those guys. They're heroes. So Butthead is not quite the insult that it once was. But in the 80s, a flatulating Butthead, a great diss, an uber diss.
It's uber, uber, uber diss. And yeah, I think even before we see those incestuous sex scenes, you know, Billy's kind of, he's kind of got the hots for his sister. You know, there's a... I mean, he's zipping up her dress in a very sexual way in one of the earlier scenes. And then later on in the movie, he walks in on her taking a shower and thinks that he sees something strange and just goes ahead and opens up the door and is staring at her naked.
Well, what he sees is that her tits are on backwards.
Yeah, it's a...
It's weird. It's a really weird thing. And like, and also, by the way, I don't know what Screaming Mad George or whoever was responsible for that effect was thinking, but those, point of order, the fake breasts, much larger than the real ones.
Yeah.
I was like, this is definitely an 80s movie. I wonder if she felt bad or if she laughed. I don't... It was just... It's really funny the way they do it.
Yeah, and they don't even look really like boobs. They just kind of look like big circles on her back.
Yeah, it's very, very weird to say the least. It is a really weird sequence. But yeah, I mean, like, this is sort of right. Like, this is the part of the accusation is that if you're rich enough, there are no rules, so you could do whatever you want, even if things aren't, you know, like, so like having sex with your sister, that would be okay. Having sex with your parents, also fine. Devouring the poor because it feels good. Because I don't, like, they don't really, this is a thing that I don't recall, and I literally just watched it. Maybe I closed my eyes, I rested my eyes and didn't catch this, but, like, do they really need to do this? It seems like they do it for fun.
Oh, yeah, this is very much a hobby. They definitely didn't flesh out whether or not by engaging in this act of shunting, as they call it, whether they're actually, you know, feeding off of the poor's sort of life force or their physical bodies. But you definitely get the sense that it's really just like an act of hedonism.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. But yeah, I mean, like, it's hard not to, like, throughout the film, just like this idea that, like, they're all really well off and you know, Billy is kind of living in this nice situation where, you know, he can be the lead athlete and also, like, be able to overtake this other guy in a public election just because, you know, he's got money or whatever is his situation. And
sure.
Like, yeah, they really hit you hard over and over again with it. But yeah, it's not until those last, like, 10 or 15 minutes where it's like, yeah, man, I mean, this is the whole movie is really is this thing, is this one really big messed up ending. It's just about how wealthy people are bad.
Totally. And it,
that's it. That's it. The moral of the story is rich people bad.
Rich people bad, and they can do whatever they want. And I think that when I first watched this movie, you know, because of all of the paranoia that Billy is experiencing, and, you know, he goes on drugs, and like there's just a lot. They don't show a lot leading up to it, and you're led to sort of believe that most of this is in Billy's head. And so when I first watched it, that was definitely my initial reaction, right? That he's imagining all of this, and the fact that the cops are manipulating situations, and the fact that his parents are sort of behind this high society and are integral to this high society, that it is all in his head. And then in one beautiful moment, it's like, holy shit, no, like, this is not all in his head. And they show you every single thing all within a 10-minute span. And so it's these final 10 minutes of this movie are, it's one of the most glorious crescendos that I think I've ever seen in a horror film, just because they show so little. You know, you see, there's one scene with his sister, right, where her boobs are on backwards. There's one scene with Clarissa where her legs are sort of screwed on weirdly. There's one scene again with his sister where he's zipping up her dress and you see just like a little like bulge on her back. But you don't see a lot until that very end. And then it's everything within the final 10 minutes. And it's just so beautiful.
Yeah. They added the they added the shower sequence later. Because they realized
they were like, we don't have enough incest in this movie.
Yeah. Well, no, they were like, at this point, like, it really is all in the last 10 minutes. So they felt like they had to pepper in some additional stuff. Here's the thing that I think that perhaps you'll find interesting. You'll have to tell me what your...
Sure, I will, Danny.
What your thought process is. Since the movie got its Blu-ray restoration, thanks to Arrow. Good job, Arrow. In 2015, there's been talk of a sequel.
Ooh. What?
Gonna make a second one. It's called Society 2.
Yeah.
Body Modification. And here's your tagline.
Oh, no.
The Revenge of the 1%.
Get out of here. The Revenge of the 1%, because they were so slighted.
Yeah, they were so, well, in this fictional world where they actually got theirs for 5 seconds. This is the pitch. So, other than the obvious reaction, which is we don't need a sequel because we're loving it. Would you watch a sequel? If they were like, we're gonna make another one of these, it's gonna be all practical effects again.
Sure.
You're all in on Society 2.
The practical effects, I'm always interested and down for a good practical effects movie. I think that, first of all, the title actually sounds basically perfect. I love the use of the colon. And as we've spoken about, when you have something like Gremlins 2 and you add the new batch, you always have to refer to that movie as the full, it's never Society 2, it's Society 2 Body Modification. I think that I'm against the premise of a sequel for this movie, just in general, just because it almost deflates the final act of Society 1. I think we've seen most of what I want to see in a shunting. That said, I am curious to see where practical effects have gone in the past 30 so years, and what Screaming Mad George, what sort of new tricks he's got up his sleeve. So I feel like I'd watch it. I might fast forward through the actual movie to get to such shunting type of activities.
Well, for all we know, like, here's my guess. I think we'd straight up open on it. I don't think they'd waste any time. That's my gut on this.
Okay.
I think they would open on some stuff, and then they'd pull back, and then, you know, do a little bit here and there. Yeah, they'd rein it in. They'd show you something big. They'd give you a big opening set piece, you know, very Touch of Evil, and then pull back for a while, and then slowly build back up. Ooh. And then have another big crescendo in the end. And in that way, I don't know. I mean, like, the world's devouring itself anyway, so I'm all in on a Society sequel. You might as well. Yeah. If I'm going to live it, I might as well. Because the thing is, you know, because the first movie does genuinely have some really dark, weird jokes, including the dad, who is literally a butthead, and also that there's a judge who joins and devours another guy, and when he comes out of it, he's got the guy's beauty mark on his cheek.
Which is beautiful.
It is. It's super really exciting. Hilarious. Like, it's very, like, I don't know. I mean, I feel like I can't laugh at the actual things that are going on. Like, at first I thought maybe I could, but no.
No, this movie is catharsis. And I think that if we are going to live in the darkest timeline, you might as well enjoy things that poke fun at it, or at least help you realize the absurdity that you're living in. And that actually is a beautiful segue to one of the final moments in this movie, which is where this judge, after sort of emerging from this poor fleshy dude's body with the beauty mark on his cheek, says, you know, we've got an opening in Washington. you know, that's in my mind where not only real life might go, but where the sequel might take the plot of Society in general.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. Yeah, so it would be set in Washington, D.C., and I mean, like, I don't know how literal they need to make it, but...
I mean, this would be probably pretty literal.
I guess, yeah, it's kind of tricky in a way. I don't know, I'm not saying that Society 2 has got to be, like, Get Out levels of good. In fact, if it was really trashy, I think I would be fine. I'm waiting for us to throw off the shackles of art house horror and kind of return to Society style filmmaking. I kind of want that.
To the glory days. The glory days.
Yeah. I feel bad for Billy's first girlfriend who just kind of disappears. I mean, I guess she gets out okay, right? She's all right?
Yeah, I think she's okay. She was, you know, I think anyone that is that, it's what I found interesting is that you're, you know, I think she's sort of meant to represent the sort of the precursor to this high society, right? So that, you know, high society not only exists with the adults, but it also is existing in high school, right? And she's only concerned about popularity and sort of rising up the social ladder. And so I think she's used as a foil to, you know, show that this is something that is present throughout every sort of phase of our lives. But it feels like he upgraded to Clarissa pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, she dated Prince, so yeah, for
that's
sure.
A big upgrade.
That's a huge upgrade. That's about as, you know, anybody gets the Prince seal of approval.
Yeah,
is arguably the most beautiful girl in the world. You could argue, you could contend.
You absolutely could. So during the shunting, I rewound it a couple times, not just to watch all the sort of gruesome effects and slime and, you know, body horror moments, but the actor who plays Billy's psychiatrist, who's also one of the sort of upper tier society who's part of the shunting, they give him this like Joker-esque makeup in this final scene, and he also has one of the best Joker cackles that I have ever heard. This is like Mark Hamill-esque laugh that I think I listened to it at least four or five times. It's phenomenal. So if nothing else, if you're not into the gore, you can maybe at least enjoy that element of the movie.
Oh yeah, they give him that crazy weird fake smile that looks like the Jack Nicholson smile kind of.
Oh yeah,
it's a wrap on Society. I think that, but it's definitely a horror movie for people who like horror movies. That's how I often refer to it, because It's not beginner baby's first horror. It's not usually the one that comes up, but anybody that ever talks to me that is like a finds out that I'm a big horror fan, and they also are some manner of horror hound, this movie invariably comes up. It is a film that seems to come up amongst people that watch a lot of horror movies. So let's just say someone has watched Society.
Sure.
And you're like, I want more. What would you recommend to them? What would you say, go watch this?
It's a great question. I think the low-hanging fruit is just the Reanimator series. I think I find a lot of just tonal similarities as well as effect similarities. Even like the score is surprisingly similar. So I think my brain immediately goes to Reanimator. I think that in terms of just shock value, and this is gonna seem sort of strange as a recommendation off of Society, but this movie caught me off guard, and obviously, you know, people that are ready for that final scene won't experience this, but this movie caught me off guard in a way that was similar to The Sixth Sense for me, where it was that sort of magic of being at the final stages of a movie and having a holy shit moment that I think is sort of rare and special, and that's what makes this movie stand out for me. So I think sort of opposite ends of the spectrum, but those are the two movies that sort of pop.
Interesting. Yeah, no, for me it was, I think the obvious answer is They Live.
Oh, sure.
You know, if you're looking for the upper echelons keeping people down, I think that's sort of like a good, obvious John Carpenter-esque answer. But honestly, if it was me, if I was going to watch Society and I was going to pair it with another movie, if it was going to do double feature, I honestly would watch it with Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, just because I think it adds such a pall to yeah. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. It makes that movie so much creepier. It really does add something to it. I mean, yeah, you do that, or I would say watch any screaming. Mad George stuff, because a lot of his stuff is really creepy and good. I would even say, you know, like watch like The Guyver, which he I think directed. Ooh, also.
That's a Mark Hamill special.
It is a Mark Hamill special. Yeah. I wouldn't call it a great movie, but the monsters in that are super good. They're really creepy good. There's a lot of possibilities, a lot of ways you could go. Or if you wanted like another Yuzna classic, yeah, I would say like Return of the Living Dead 3, or God, if you really want to punish yourself, watch any of the Dentist movies. God, those are nightmare. Those are nightmare fuel on a level that are unparalleled for me. They are those movies that, like, I don't go to dentists because of the dentist.
I gotta say, the more that I think about this double feature with Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, the more I love that concept, because you could basically have a body horror double feature. You know, you watch Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, you know, you got your kids there, you put them to bed, and then, you know, you watch the really creepy stuff with Society. It's kind of perfect.
Yeah, I mean, I'm brilliant. I'm just so smart. That's why.
And humble.
That's me, yeah. Smart and humble. This is why they pay me the big bucks to sit behind a microphone and talk shit about horror movies. Anyway, that, I think, is where we're going to end it. Max, thanks for coming and doing the podcast with me.
It was a blast. Any opportunity to chat with you, and, you know, Society's a bonus to boot. So
where can people find your work and yourself on the internet?
Sure. They can find me at Max Tadaldi. So I went really, really, original with the Twitter handle. And that's probably where I spend most of my days.
Nice. You can find me at sci-fi.com. That's a great place. And they could find you there, too, if they wanted to. They could listen to the Wynonna Earp official podcast if they're getting caught up.
Well, I didn't want to go promo-y with it, but if you're going to advocate for me, I'll take it.
That's your job. Do your job, Max.
You know I don't do my job.
That's true. I do know that about you. Yeah, you just actually you bring in your twin, and you just make him do it for you. It's like a Lindsay Lohan situation. Anyway, except not evil. But hey,
that you know of.
let me get the hell out of this situation. My name is Danny Roth. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Danny Ordinary. That is Danny with one N. Ordinary, also with one N. Thank you for listening to this podcast. And remember, kids, sometimes the best cure for the horrors of every day is a little everyday horror. Eat the rich, and we'll see you next time.